produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, THC shown to inhibit primary marker of Alzheimer's disease better than approved medications. Scientists at the Scripps Research Institute have found that the active ingredient in marijuana, tetrahydrocannabidiol, or THC, inhibits the formation of amyloid plaque, the primary pathological marker for Alzheimer's disease. According to preclinical findings to be published in Molecular Pharmaceutics, the Journal of the American Chemical Society, investigators reported that THC inhibits the enzyme acetylcholinesterase, or ACHE, which acts as a, quote, molecular chaperone, close quote, to accelerate the formation of amyloid plaque in the brains of Alzheimer's victims. Although experts disagree on whether the presence of beta-amyloid plaques in those areas critical to memory and cognition is a symptom or cause, it remains a significant hallmark of the disease. Noting the strong inhibitory abilities of THC, the study said that cannabinoids, quote, may provide an improved therapeutic for Alzheimer's disease, close quote, that would treat, quote, both the symptoms and progression, close quote, of the disease. The study said THC is a, quote, considerably superior inhibitor of amyloid plaque aggregation, close quote, to several currently approved drugs, such as Donepezil and Tacrin, for treating the disease. Professor of Chemistry at Scripps Research Kim Janda, Ph.D., stated, quote, "These findings offer convincing evidence that THC possesses remarkable inhibitory qualities, especially when compared to ACHE inhibitors currently available to patients. In a test against propidium, one of the most effective inhibitors reported to date, THC blocked ACHE-induced aggregation completely, while propidium did not. Although our study is far from final, it does show that there is a previously unrecognized molecular mechanism through which THC may directly affect the progression of Alzheimer's disease," close quote. Previous studies have shown cannabinoids to hold antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties, both of which may play a role in moderating Alzheimer's. Last year, investigators at Madrid's Complutense University and Cajal Institute in Spain reported that the intracerebroventricular administration of the synthetic cannabinoid WIN55212-2 prevented cognitive impairment and decreased neurotoxicity in rats. Additional cannabinoids were also found to reduce the inflammation associated with Alzheimer's disease in human brain tissue in culture. Quote, "Our results indicate that cannabinoids succeed in preventing the neurodegenerative process occurring in the disease," close quote, investigators concluded. Currently, there are no effective treatments or a cure for Alzheimer's, and the number of Americans expected to fall victim to the disease is expected to triple in the next 50 years. More information about this story on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Keith Stropp, founder of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. When I founded the organization in 1970 to create a national discussion on the need to legalize marijuana for responsible adult use, no one honestly believed that 36 years later, marijuana would still be an illegal and untaxed commodity. However, since Normal began this important advocacy effort, 12 states have decriminalized the possession of marijuana, and 11 states have passed medical marijuana laws or voter initiatives, meaning that over one-third of the American population lives in a state or municipality that has reformed their marijuana laws. Isn't it time that Congress step in and pass national legislation to reform marijuana laws? Let's finish the job of legalizing marijuana once and for all by you and your like-minded friends joining and supporting Normal's long-standing advocacy. You can learn more about Normal's marijuana law reform efforts or become an active supporter by calling toll-free 888-67-NORMAL or by visiting www.normal.org.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org. Tuesdays, we focus on medical and patient issues. Next week, we'll have a brand new patient perspectives interview. Today, with the breaking news on Alzheimer's disease, we'll find out more about cannabis and the brain with Paul Armentano. Paul is Normal's senior policy analyst and joins us frequently here on the Audio Stash. In April of 2006, Paul gave the following presentation at the Normal Conference.
Bottom line is the government is lying. We have the facts on our side, and what we need to do is get those facts out there. And with that said, I'm going to give a presentation on marijuana use and cannabinoids and the brain. And in a nutshell, this paper, which you can actually read the full paper on our website, is a good example of the fact that the government is lying when they talk about marijuana and when they talk about how the components of marijuana interact with the brain. Your government wouldn't lie, would you? Here's what Drug Czar John Walters has to say about marijuana and the brain. Smoked marijuana damages the brain, impairs learning, and contains cancer-causing compounds. That's what he says. What's the science say? First topic I'm going to talk about, and one of the speakers yesterday, actually Ed Rosenthal, touched on this, is this concept of neurogenesis. Literally, neurogenesis is defined as the birth of new neurons. This is a process that takes place most often in prenatal development, and we've also fairly recently discovered that there's also adult neurogenesis too. And it is believed that this process helps to enable organisms to adapt to their environment and influence their learning and memory throughout life. Interestingly, most so-called drugs of abuse, including opiates, alcohol, nicotine, and cocaine, suppress the formation of new neurons in the brain. Marijuana, however, we've discovered, actually has the opposite effect. This was based on a paper published last fall by an international research team out of the University of Saskatchewan. What they did was they took rats and they administered them a synthetic cannabinoid known as HU210. They administered the rats that twice a day for 10 days. Then they waited 1 month after they did this and they investigated. They looked at the hippocampus part of the brain, and what they found was, and I quote, and you can read it up there, "We show that 1 month after chronic HU210 treatment, rats displayed increased newborn neurons in the hippocampus." And arguably, as importantly, they found no neuronal death following chronic HU210 treatment in adult rats. They concluded, "Cannabinoids appear to be the only illicit drug whose capacity to produce increased hippocampal newborn neurons is positively correlated with its anti-anxiety and antidepressant-like effects." One of the reasons I really point this out, too, is they're talking about the part of the brain, the hippocampus, that's involved in forming memories. And it is often told, and Drug Czar John Walters continues to say, not only does marijuana harm the brain specifically, it harms the brain that's involved in the formation of new memories, particularly it harms the hippocampus. This is actually a study that says, unlike alcohol, unlike nicotine, unlike cocaine, the administration at least of this cannabinoid seemed to proliferate neuronal growth in that part of the brain. You might be wondering how they measure anti-anxiety and anti-depression effects in rats. It's actually quite interesting. What they do is they move them to a new environment and they wait to see how long it takes them to eat. And if the rats eat more quickly, they assume they're less depressed. I actually think the fact they were giving them this very strong synthetic cannabinoid twice a day for 10 days, the rats may have just had the munchies. But in this case, they also concluded that they happened to be less depressed in addition to having stimulating this growth of new brain cells in the hippocampal part of the brain. Another aspect that I want to talk about, cannabis and neuroprotection. Animal studies have shown now for some time that the administration of certain cannabinoids can protect brain cells from dying in cases of stroke, alcohol poisoning, and neurotoxicity associated with a number of ailments, a couple of those being Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and traumatic brain injury. 1998, proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This was a study that actually did get some favorable press in this country, probably because it was done by the National Institutes of Mental Health. What they discovered was in animals, CBD, which is a non-psychoactive cannabinoid, what they did was they stimulated the overproduction of a neurotransmitter called a glutamate. Glutamate, when it's overproduced, kills brain cells. Generally, when there's blunt head trauma or even in cases of stroke, the body overproduces this chemical, and that's what leads to brain death when people have those injuries or ailments. What they did was they stimulated this neurotransmitter in rats. They did it for 10 minutes, and then they gave them CBD to see if, in fact, it would protect the rat brain. What they found out, in fact, was that when they gave them CBD, and in some cases when they gave them Delta-9 THC, it did protect the rat brain from cell death, and they did it better than a vitamin C and vitamin E, which are commonly administered antioxidants. They concluded that these data also suggest that the naturally occurring non-psychotropic cannabinoid cannabidiol may be potentially useful as a therapeutic agent for the treatment of neurological disorders such as cerebral ischemia, which is a condition that is involved with strokes. They also, when they did this study, they actually gave very low doses to the rats, and the scientists believe that had they given higher doses to the rats, it actually would have been even more effective. Also, neuroprotective in cases of cerebral infarction, which is localized cell death in the brain because of a reduced blood flow. This also generally happens in cases of stroke. They gave CBD for 24 hours after they induced this situation, and what they found was treatment of CBD significantly reduced the infarct volume in mice in a dose-dependent manner. In other words, the more CBD they gave, the better the results. The less CBD they gave, the results weren't as favorable. They concluded that CBD exerts a neuroprotective effect through its antioxidant, antispasmodic, anti-emetic, which means anti-nauseant, as well as through vasorelaxation. Really not surprising when you begin to understand cannabinoids and the endocannabinoid system, something one of our speakers, Bob Melamy, is going to talk about more. We jumped to 2005, National Institutes of Mental Health, once again looking at rats. God forbid we could ever do any of these studies in people. Marijuana might be too dangerous or toxic. What they found in this case was, ironically, if you administer CBD to rats at the same time you give them very high doses and dangerous doses of alcohol, that marijuana actually protects the brain against alcohol poisoning in a dose-dependent fashion. Once again, they found that the brain was most protected in the hippocampus part of the brain. Once again, the effect was dose-dependent. Compared to controls, the CBD did perform better than the diuretics. They concluded that this study provides the first demonstration of CBD as a neuroprotectant in preventing binge ethanol-induced brain injury. Some of you may be familiar with an agent called dexanabinol. It was a synthetic drug produced by an Israeli company known as Pharmos, and it was produced for the treatment of neuroprotection in cases of traumatic brain injury. It performed very well in phase 1 studies. It performed well in phase 2 studies. They did a major worldwide phase 3 trial looking at whether patients who were brought into a hospital after sustaining severe head injury, whether the administration of dexanabinol would help protect their brain cells. The brain damage was probably irreversible. I don't know that. I'm not a scientist, but I do want to point out, talking about some of these findings in animals, we can't necessarily conclude that the same thing would happen in humans. This is a case in humans, and in the phase 3 trial, it didn't, despite the fact that in animals, it very clearly has shown this neuroprotective effect.
We're listening to Paul Armentano, Normal's senior policy analyst, in his talk on cannabis and the brain. You can read the white paper and hear the full talk with links on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Let's continue with Paul's presentation.
Another topic I want to talk about briefly, this idea of cannabinoids and neurodegeneration. There's a number of neurodegenerative diseases that have been studied for some time. Mostly we've talked about marijuana and how it provides symptomatic relief to some of these diseases, particularly multiple sclerosis. What we're finding out now is that rather than just symptomatic relief, cannabinoids can actually slow down the progression of some of these very serious diseases like MS, like Parkinson's disease, like Alzheimer's, and like Lou Gehrig's disease. Why do I say that? There was a very important study that was published in 2003 by a research team out of the University College of London. I know Bob Mellamy talks about this study quite a bit, too. What they were doing was they gave animals a model of multiple sclerosis. They gave them allergic encephalomyelitis, and then they gave them cannabinoids. And what they found out, that in addition to symptom management, cannabis may also slow down the neurodegenerative processes that ultimately lead to chronic disability and MS and probably other diseases. Essentially, what they found out was marijuana wasn't giving just symptomatic relief. It was actually slowing down the process, the progression of the disease itself. Another neurodegenerative disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, was studied by a research team once again at California Pacific Medical Center here in San Francisco. As most people know, we have very little treatment, effective treatments for Lou Gehrig's disease. In this case, it was reported that Delta-9 THC was effective when it was before the onset of ALS symptoms in a mouse model. It delayed some of the symptoms of the disease, but more importantly, it actually prolonged survival in the treated mice compared to the untreated mice. They concluded that Delta-9 THC was well tolerated, and in fact, it and other cannabinoids may prove down the line to be a novel therapeutic target for the treatment of ALS. Alzheimer's disease, this was a study done in Spain once again. They took human brain tissue from patients that had Alzheimer's disease that had died. And when they examined the brain tissue, one commonality they found was that the endocannabinoid receptors in the brain of these patients that had Alzheimer's disease, they hadn't been working well at all when compared to controls. So when they found that, they said, okay, well, let's test this theory in rats. So they injected rats with a chemical that would bring about cognitive decline, and then they gave them cannabinoids. And what they found out was, as you see in the conclusion, cannabinoids succeeded in preventing the neurodegenerative process occurring in Alzheimer's disease. You know, once again, we're talking about this idea of memory and the fact that for years the federal government has told you that smoking marijuana kills brain cells, smoking marijuana kills your memory. Now they're talking about it actually delaying the onset of Alzheimer's disease. I find the irony quite remarkable, if once again somewhat quite offensive. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about this idea of what is the effect of marijuana on the brain and cognition. We know what the government says, but what does the science say? This is a study, actually, that was done in 2001 out of Harvard by a lead researcher named Harrison Pope. I actually think this is a fairly important study. It's one of the better ones that has been done on this subject. In these cases, most of these studies are done in the United States. The government has no problem giving marijuana and having humans smoke it because when they're looking for cognitive deficits, so it's much more easier to get these studies funded. This was a study where they actually had 180 subjects. 63 of the subjects were considered to be current or heavy users. That was defined as having smoked at least 5,000 or more times. There were 45 former heavy users, which mean at some point in their life they had smoked marijuana at least 5,000 times. And then they had 72 controls, which meant that they had defined themselves as having smoked marijuana less than 50 times. What they found out was that long-term cannabis smokers who abstained from the drug for 1 week showed virtually no significant differences from control subjects on a battery of 10 neuropsychological tests. Former heavy users who had consumed little or no cannabis in the 3 months prior to testing also showed no significant differences from control subjects on any of these tests on any testing days. I should add that they tested these subjects at 1 day, 7 days later, then 28 days later. They concluded that while they did note some minor cognitive deficits detectable in the very heavy users for 7 days, these effects did not appear to be long-lived. And in fact, at 28 days, even the long-term users tested exactly the same as the controls on this battery of 10 neuropsychological tests. Canadian researcher Peter Fried, he's been tracking a group of children now for about, well, they're adults now, from the day they were born until about age 25 or so. He wanted to see if marijuana might have any effect on IQ. And I think he was fairly surprised with what his results found. He had 70 volunteers in this study. They were aged 17 to 20. What he did was he did a measure of he had tested their IQ when they were between 9 and 12 years of age, believed to be before they may have a time preceding any sort of marijuana use. And then later, between ages 17 and 20, he broke them into different groups, heavy users, former heavy users, controls, and once again did some IQ examinations on intelligence quotient. And this is what he found, fairly interestingly. The current heavy users of marijuana actually had their IQs tested at 4 points lower than the control group. And he defined heavy users as 5 joints per week. But what's even more interesting is that when compared to what he called light users, which mean they regularly use marijuana, but they kept their use under 5 joints per week, they actually tested 6 points higher than the group that were former users and hadn't used any marijuana at all. So basically, he found heavy users tested a little lower, former users tested higher, and in the end, he concluded that marijuana does not have a long-term negative impact on global intelligence. It was actually a study for anybody. If you actually looked at the headlines, some headlines said marijuana makes you smarter. Some headlines said marijuana makes you less smart. So they really had their pick of the litter from Fried's work there. But the bottom line is it seemed to have very little impact.
That was Paul Armentano, Normal's senior policy analyst. You can download the entire talk and read more about cannabis in the brain at normalaudiostash.com. Paul welcomes questions from the public about these reports. Contact 888-67-NORMAL or email foundation@normal.org. Let's round out our Tuesday show here today with some pod-safe music from podshow.com. We're about to hear from Sunspot first and then Dread Days after that, both groups from California. We have links to them right up at normalaudiostash.com.
Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round. We rolling and bobbing and going like it, me not push and shove. They shall not teach it, me right by the door. One love, one word, one heart. Get up right now and play for your part. Cause we riding, sliding, Babylon hiding, guiding, shining, always reclining, timing, rhyming, open up your mind. One day, we stand up in the line.
I'll be rolling and rocking to the beat of me love this song.
Big ghost. Oh, yes, you can't mess with this song. Better grab your girl, your posse, and get that down.
We'll be rolling and bobbing and going like a mad back. Hold him up, but this will be your fun, ain't you no long, so miss her.
Hold tight, cause you know it coming true. It's a bubble sweet like a pot of good stew.
Bubble in high town.
The man J.E. Wah. The man Dano. Wah. The man Chris. What? What I want? The man Mingy Ghost, the man Dre Days. The most. We light up the coast. The West Coast, no boss. Make sure they burn the West Coast. Nice name.
Some PodSafe music for you here on the Audio Stash, found up at podshow.com. We have links to PodShow and the artists we present here on the Audio Stash at normalaudiostash.com.
James Rockford here from peopleradio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh, well, now on with the show.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks again to Paul Armentano for contributing to today's show. To podshow.com for all the great PodSafe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.